Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for January 19th, 2014. I'm your host, David McLaughlin, and welcome, as always, my co-host, Catherine Smith.
Hello, David.
Yes,
greetings from Atlanta, everyone.
Yes, and tonight it's you and I by design. The overwhelming majority of this show will be framed around our Southern political power rankings. We've done this, if we've done it maybe 10 times throughout the time we've been on the air, it wouldn't surprise me, but we like to do it sort of towards the start of an election year and maybe update it once during there. And it really, we look at which states are the most interesting to follow, which ones are going to be kind of the most important. You know, if you were really wanting to, you know, you didn't live in any of these states and you really wanted to spend some time where it would be interesting, number one's going to be, you know, at the top of the list, and towards the end, it's like, well, we know it's important to the folks that live in that state, but to the outside observer, there's not as many races, there's not as many competitive races, those kind of things, so we'll get into that. But probably the first thing that we need to talk about is this past week, a longtime listener of the show, and also probably the number one commenter on Blog for Democracy, your blog, Catherine, he passed away, Mr. Joe Prince. In addition, he was the longtime chair of the Bartow County Democratic Party. That's probably where I knew him from best because I live one county over. Joe was just so involved and so dedicated. And, Catherine, you went to the service. So tell us about that and tell us some of your thoughts on Joe.
Well, the service was really quite touching. Lowell Greenbaum, who's the president of the Georgia Association of Democratic Chairs, gave a little eulogy and talked about Joe's participation in that organization and just his general participation in Democratic politics, as well as his, you know, just general great guy. You know, he was a really warm and generous fellow, and I think he'll really be missed. He was always supportive of Democratic candidates, Democratic organizations, very well educated, very smart, and, you know, sometimes a little off topic, but really a great guy. And I think the service was really, it was lighthearted while, you know, still being reverent. It wasn't irreverent. It was lighthearted, and we also heard from his brother, his older brother, and I'm glad I went. I saw a lot of my Democratic friends who are also friends of Joe's, and you know, I spoke briefly with the family, and it's always sad when we lose someone from our flock, but it was nice to get together with everyone and share some of our memories of him. So I think we're all a little sad about it. He was a great guy.
So he meant so much to Bartow County, because I remember early being involved in politics, I guess in the late 90s, if you will. He and another guy named James, and I forget James' name, they kind of started together with the Bartow County Democratic Party. And honestly, Joe, I guess, might have been in a way number two. And I don't think he minded that at the time. And this fellow James, he just hit it so hard. And he's like a comet. I mean, he was really, just doing everything for a year to 2 year period. And then he went away. And Joe was like the foundation. And I mean, he was the Bartow County Democratic Party leader. Sometimes they would get somebody like a Lester Tate to take the chair. But I mean, Joe was the kind of the backbone and foundation for, you know, probably over a decade. Because I know he was around before even Roger Kahn ran, I think, the first time. And so that was in 2000. So this would be, you know, 14, 16 years we're looking at now. being around working. And then, of course, on the blog, I remember early on Joe had his email list, and he would send people these emails that really were just, I mean, they're about politics, but nobody really, they just kind of came out organically, let's say. And I thought that the blog, when Blog for Democracy came up and he would actually start commenting on what was written, it was just, and the emails went away. It was just such a good thing for Joe to let all those thoughts he had out in a form where more folks could read them. Folks were, you know, getting them or reading them because they were there on that. And I thought that was just, y'all provided him a really good outlet to, you know, spread his voice.
Yes, absolutely. And he was very interested in economics and often posted sometimes more, what's the word?
Maybe collegiate.
Academic.
Yeah.
Yeah, collegiate or academic type links. But, you know, I think, like you said, I think that it gave, it was a way for him to tell people about things that maybe we didn't know about. So, I mean, I think we all welcomed that most of the time. I mean, I'll be honest, sometimes it was a little frustrating, and he knew that, and we had conversations about it. But he was general. I mean, it was all well-intentioned and with the most generous thought, you know.
Yes.
He was a great guy.
And if it wasn't... Yeah, an open thread, of course. Open threads lend
That's
themselves
right.
for folks to just talk about what they want to talk about. So I know y'all do those usually at least once a week back when it was really clicking. Well, let's get into our Southern State rankings, something Joe would have enjoyed, I'm sure, and probably did at times when we did these. If we had posted them on Blog for Democracy, we might have gotten comments on where we were wrong or right or what have you. But we're going to do it a little different tonight. We've always just, when it's usually the three of us, you know, me, you, and Tim, we would, you know, say, hey, what do you have at 14 or 13 or wherever we start? But this time I thought, let's go ahead and tell a state. We can tell where we have it ranked, and then we'll cover the states, but maybe a little more organized fashion to listen to, and if we end up posting it somewhere like our Facebook page, folks can see it in a visual list as well. But let's just start off with our home state here in Georgia. Catherine, where do you have Georgia?
Well, you know, I always put Georgia as number one because it's the number one for me. And I do think it's going to get a little bit more attention this year, probably not as much as some of the other ones as far as national and regional attention. But for me, it's number one. And I think the things that we're going to be hearing the most about are the Senate race. Certainly, before the primary, we're going to hear a lot about the Republicans. But I think Michelle Nunn is going to get a lot of attention. I shouldn't say a lot. Significant in comparison to previous elections nationally and regionally. And then, of course, I think the Jason Carter's challenge to Nathan Deal is going to be newsworthy and an interesting for observers will be interesting to watch to see how that plays out, you know, depending on what happens in our legislative session and then immediately following. So I think it'll be an interesting one to watch. Where do you have it?
I have Georgia third, and of course it's my home state. I've never lived anywhere else, and I'm as fascinated as anybody by Georgia politics, but I always try to be so objective. A lot of times,
I know.
If I remember, I've always tried to push Georgia down. And a lot of times I've had Georgia a lot lower than three. Three is a statement by me saying, hey, this is important. The fact that there is a governor's race, there is a Senate race, there's a lot of congressional races that are open that are going to have outstanding primaries. I don't know how many good generals will be, maybe John Barrow, but I have a funny feeling he'll defend, and that race really won't be is interesting. A lot of people think, just like last time, it was this, you know, races to watch, and John Barrow took care of business. But you do have the Thomas Brown, Hank Johnson primary on the Democratic side. You have, what, five open seats or some crazy number on the Republican side with Kingston and maybe five's too many, but Kingston and Gingrey, and I think there's at least one other that are
Brown.
Open seats. Brown. Yeah, so there's at least three. So all those are there. So those are interesting races. There's a lot to watch. The one reason I guess I didn't have it as high, it's probably a little bit about the other states, and we'll get to those two for me. But the fact that the poll did come out and it didn't show we were that close on particularly the governor's race. The Senate poll wasn't really worth looking at this point in the numbers. And then, you know, this past week, it is one of those little topics we need to talk about. Governor Deal talked about putting $500 million-some-odd dollars back into education. Now, of course, I'm wise enough to know that the Republicans since 2002, that's not all Deal, that's Sonny Perdue as well, have cut billions of dollars out of the education budget. And so putting back less than a quarter is not enough. But given that it's a political year, and I think a lot of teachers were really mad at Nathan Deal, this may be the kind of thing that appeases them. And I think that's a lot of why he did it. I think if you looked at some of his polling, he was probably not doing well with teachers and parents that had seen all these cuts, and now he's doing this, and you won't see all the furlough days. You won't see the RIFs and employees, and it may buy him just a few votes. And so I'm just worried that move may have solidified his position a little bit with voters that he probably had last time and was losing this time. Catherine, what's been some of the talk on that $500 million that you've heard?
Well, I think, you know, I think what you say is true that, you know, some people are saying, oh, well, you know, he's putting all this money back in. But as you said, there's been billions. I mean, I heard someone say $1 billion a year for 10 years. So $10 billion. I don't know where those numbers came. That was
you might have. They might be cutting. They might be counting dollars twice. I know that.
Yeah, I mean that seemed like a lot. I mean,
it was somewhere around $2 billion, and so Deal's been governor not quite a whole term, so it might get up to, let's just say, three. And I knew this past year was a really, really drastic cut or two. So I still don't think that gets you to 10, but billions of dollars for the number one line budget item.
Yeah.
It's scary, particularly
well,
for the 90s, in which education was promoted so much by Governor Miller and Governor Barnes.
I do think that State Senator Carter's suggestion, I don't know if he did a resolution or not, about making the state education budget separate from the rest of the budget, I think that was a way for him to sort of signify how important education is to him and how he will be focusing on that in his campaign. And I think it shows, shows that he's taking it very seriously. I'm not sure what that means in terms of, you know, actual functionality, but I think it probably is appealing that, you know, we debate the education budget separately from the rest of the budget. That's probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, and obviously his state of the state was very robust, and it shows that he's going to put up a really, really strong fight and, you know, check Governor Deal at every point. And one thing he will have going for him that Roy Barnes and Mark Taylor didn't have in the last two elections, it doesn't look like he's going to get a significant primary challenge, whereas Governor Barnes had Thurbert Baker, David Poitras, DuBose Porter all run against him. Of course, the time before, Kathy Cox. I mean, so there was – he's going to get to be the voice of the Democratic Party for a much longer sustained period. So hopefully that will make you more right than me on our rankings. But let's go ahead and move to another state. And make that state Florida. We'll go south of us. Florida, of course, it's always got interesting politics. Where did you rank it this time?
I ranked it number 2.
Man, Catherine, I don't even know your rankings, and I'm going straight down them. Number 2, tell us why.
Florida's always, you know, there's always a big, you know, spotlight on Florida because it's always been sort of a, you know, it's always a swing state, and obviously it's usually more prominent in presidential elections. But I think this battle between Crist and Scott will be interesting. So I mean, I just always think it's interesting to look at Florida. So, and I think everybody's, it's common for everyone to look at it. So I think that's mainly my reason. Where do you have it?
I have it fourth, so I did stay consistent in putting it one slot below Georgia like you did. Of course, it's the only state I know of where you can take your pet alligator to the Walmart. So that's always fun. But I agree with you. The main event in Florida is going to be the governor's race. You know, Charlie Crist, he's come out with a new book this week talking about how why he switched to the Democratic Party and, you know, how Republicans have left mainstream. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how effective that is. Obviously, it looks like he is going to be the he's going to be, you know, the Democratic Party nominee. Of course, a sitting governor. I don't think Rick Scott, even though he is quite unpopular, will get knocked off. The one reason I guess I didn't have it lower is, honestly, they don't have a U.S. Senate race, so they don't have that in their favor. And the constitutional offices, they don't have that many. And other than attorney general, there's not a real, you know, hardcore campaign for any of them. Now, on the congressional end, they do have some competitive districts, one of those being a you know, special election, which is going to – they already had the primary this past week, and David Jolly, a lobbyist and congressional aide, won the primary, and he's going to face off amongst Alex Sink, who seems to be the most popular politician not to be elected to anything other than, I guess, that one auditor office she was held for so long. But she's, they did a poll, and I think she kind of thought, well, if I step down and run for Congress, which I love as a strategy as a political consultant, you know, stepping down and running for something and winning. But it's showing that she has a – she's behind by 4 points to David Jolly. Now, I will say I did look at the methodology of this poll, and they really tried to look at who turns out for these special elections. So they did a very, very tight methodology that probably favors the Republicans. But if that's what the electorate will look like, I guess those methods were accurate. So it's not like – this is probably worst-case scenario for Alex Sink if she's down by four. So it'll be interesting to see if she can come back. And I think that race may kind of be a precursor to exactly where Florida is going to be in some other races. What did you make of that poll?
Well, Catherine? you know how I am about polls. I'm always suspicious of, you know, how they. But you know, you did say you looked at the methodology. She is very popular, but she just can't seem to get elected. So maybe this is her chance. Maybe this is the one. Let's hope.
So I mean, this thing will come out in March. We'll get to look at it now. If she, you know, it depends what she does. If she does better than expected, not only wins but wins by a few points. If she loses, if it's really, really close, I mean, something will be out of there. Because this was a Republican-held district, but it's one of those districts where I think President Obama won, but, you know, because it had Bill Young, who had been around a long time and had always taken care of the district on the pork side of things, you know, it just still stayed in the Republican column in that way. Well, let's continue to – we'll stay on – states that border the Atlantic. That's how we'll go with this. And let's move up to South Carolina. Catherine, where did you put the Palmetto State?
At number five.
Number five, okay.
And how about you?
You don't have to give us too many reasons. I put it at number two.
Okay, well, why don't you go first this time?
I will. On the governor's race, Vincent C. Shaheen ran an incredibly competitive governor's race. And now he's running in a rematch against Nikki Haley. I personally believe this could be what Jason Carter is looking to do in Georgia, looking at a two-cycle, you know, campaign for governor. Of course, he won't be having to run against an incumbent governor the second time, which is even better. So it could be that he's looking at Vincent Shaheen's playbook. Therefore, we can look at South Carolina to study what Georgia's future could look like. And, of course, that race is interesting in its own just because – you know, Shaheen's a good politician. You got Nikki Haley, who's been controversial, including locking herself out of the house in a robe and Facebook posting about it. And then add to that, you have two Senate races. You have Lindsey Graham, who is not a fan, not, you know, well-liked by the Tea Party. You have Tim Scott, who is well-liked by the Tea Party, but who has never stood for statewide election, is an African-American Republican, so that's something to look at with some, and I use that as a very, you know, hopefully a very small sum, conservative voters and how they're going to react to that. And so all of that you can look at. And on your congressional races, you have a few where you have either primaries or general elections. And so, and of course, they have all their down ballot races because with, you know, some people moving on to different offices, you have a few races there that are interesting. So you've got a lot going on in the Palmetto State. And so that's why I think it's, you know, worth watching so highly at number two.
Well, I have a question that something that you didn't mention about South Carolina, and that's that I read somewhere, now I'm trying to look where it is, that Andre Bauer was also running for governor as an independent.
I have heard rumors of that, and I think Lachlan McIntyre, last time he was on the show, talked about that. And actually, Andre Bauer, independent, is on Politics One.
That's
he
where it must have been where I thought.
Lowercase, it's not lowercase, he's in thin font. If they're in bold font, they're running. If they're in the thinner font, they're rumored. And I will tell you, he's got a site. It says, Andre Bauer, let's get America working again. I don't think he's running his own temporary job service. But he, and actually it has a Congress, I guess he ran for Congress at some point, but he's obviously not wanting to go away, if you will. And so I guess there's rumors that he may look at that, but you'd have to poll pretty heavily on that. But if he did, that would only make that state more interesting. So good observation, Catherine, on that.
Exactly.
One.
That's what made me that was the thing that made me interested in it, was that it's always interesting to have an independent who's, you know, he was a Republican, and he was, you know, he's not just some random, you know, oh, I woke up this morning and decided I wanted to run for governor, you know, like we have sometimes.
Yeah.
He's a viable candidate for something.
Well, he's a guy that said, hey, I woke up this morning, I want to run for governor, and I've been lieutenant governor. And I use the strategy of filling in potholes all across the state and getting in newspaper articles, because I'd heard a long time ago about that strategy. I think his I cannot ever remember this fellow's name, but he was Lee Atwater's, one of his big disciples, and actually ended up going to prison for some dirty tricks. But he came back out of prison, and one of his clients was Andre Bauer. And so he's resourceful, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see if anything develops in that. We'll keep an eye on that.
Yes. Well, let's go to another state. We'll go up north of South Carolina to North Carolina. And, Catherine, where did you put North Carolina?
I put them at number four.
And I had them a little lower at I didn't put numbers beside my rankings. That was pretty dumb of me, so I have to actually look at them and count down. Tell us why you put it number four, and then I'm going to give my number here in a second.
Well, I there were two things that struck me about North Carolina, and they aren't really electoral, honestly. One of them is the Moral Mondays movement, which has, you know, shined a big light on North Carolina and has been quite effective. They have quite a movement going on over there. They're going to have a big march on February 8th, I think it is. People from all over the country are coming in to march on, I think it's in, I don't know if it's in Raleigh or I don't know where it is. I should know because I think I'm supposed to go, but whatever. So I think that that's going to be attention-grabbing. And then the other thing is I read a little article about some state senator who wrote who resigned, state senator or state representative, you know, actually he might have been even lower ranked than that, who wrote his resignation letter in Klingon. He resigned because he's looking at, he was a councilman, and he wrote his resignation letter in Klingon, David Waddle, and it's because he's looking at, oh, what is this?
Yeah, this guy sounds fascinating. I hope he's not a factor in North Carolina, but he sounds,
well, I just thought
it
was interesting. It was an interesting little bit of information, but the thing that really makes me think that we're going to be seeing some reporting from North Carolina is because of the Moral Mondays and Reverend Barber.
Yes.
What do you think about North
Carolina? I went ahead and I put it seventh. I put it a little lower. And obviously, and if you look at it, there were two kind of factors in there that will cause it to move up or down. Is how vulnerable is Kay Hagan? I'm under the belief that right now she's not that vulnerable. Now,
she starts to get in a
very tough race, it moves up. So I kind of hope it stays low. There is a congressional race or two that's worth watching. Just this past week, Mike McIntyre, a congressman from, I believe, the Greensboro area, he announced that he's resigning or retiring, I should say. And so filling his seat, because I don't think his seat is a slam dunk for either party, which is rare in today's Congress, that's going to be something to watch. And so that keeps it above maybe some of the other Senate races or the states with only a Senate race, if you will, because their governor's race happens with presidential year, so it's not up this time. So that's kind of where I ranked it. Yeah, well, and as we speak, I'm trying to put mine into Facebook for everybody to look at later, and also it'll help me since, like I said, I listed those things down. And then I didn't put numbers, and that was not the right thing to do when I'm having to look at them on the go. But let's go ahead and keep moving up the coast and go to Virginia. And
I have it
at Catherine, of course, yes, at eight. And I tell you what, if we looked at the odd year, it would have been number one last year. But the governor's race is off the table, so it drops to eight for you, and it's going to drop for me too. Tell us about eight.
Well, the thing that I think will be interesting is just seeing how the race between Gillespie and Warner goes, because you know Gillespie was a former head of the Republican Party and advisor to George W. Bush, right? And
yeah.
So I think it'll be interesting just how political that gets between him and Warner, but I think that the polls show Warner way ahead. They love him. So, I still think it'll be interesting just to see how, is it Ed Gillespie? How he plays that race. I just think it'll be sort of an interesting study in going from the political consultancy, world into politics, sort of like we did with McAuliffe, because it's the same kind of situation.
Yes. I'll tell you, I had Virginia 11th, and, Ed Gillespie, he's running now, and so that's keeping that up a little higher than some other states. Mark Warner is so popular. So until Ed Gillespie gets within single digits, if you will, it's going to be hard to give it much. What's interesting is I believe Ed Gillespie was head of the RNC, and their governor was Terry McAuliffe was head of the DNC. And
Right. Obviously
Virginia understands that they're a pretty political state, if you will, from their proximity to Washington. But do they want two of their three top offices to be, straight up professional political hacks, if you will? And so that's something to look at. One other thing, I believe just in the past a week or two, Jim Moran, he decided he's going to resign, and he is in the Northern Virginia area. Apparently his district is very Democratic, and there is a laundry list of candidates that's looking at this race, one Republican, one Libertarian, and it looks like half the Democrats in the district are looking at this thing. Only one has been announced, and that was Bruce Shuttlesworth. I have a feeling next time Lowell Feld comes on, we'll be talking about District 8 and that special election, actually not special election, but that open seat. And also Frank Wolf is in District 10. He's retiring. So, and that one, you got some Republicans and some Democrats Frank Wolf is a Republican, so that'll be interesting to see if that race is real competitive. So, you know, it's one that if I revisit it, you know, next time, say half a year from now, I might have to move it up higher where you've got it, Catherine.
Okay.
Well, let's stay in the Virginias. Let's go to West Virginia, and that's going to be the northern tip of our what we call the South. We're not going to do Maryland this time because I just don't know how many people consider Maryland a southern state anymore. But where do you have Maryland? I'm sorry, West Virginia.
I have West Virginia at 10.
Now, what
the
only
thing that I think is interesting about West Virginia, you know, it is leaning Republican these days, but it'll be interesting to see how this terrible chemical spill that has really affected that state in an unbelievably, you know, I mean, this whole, like, you know, they didn't have water for days. In fact, they still have water. And they're still saying that pregnant women shouldn't touch the water and shouldn't drink the water. And so it'll be interesting to see if that changes this R-leaning state. If
yes.
They feel it'll just be, it could, because I think the Democrats have generally been more in favor of, you know, restrictions and regulations on chemical companies, and I mean, I think we are more regulation oriented. So it'll be interesting to see if that, if those values affect the voters of West Virginia after this spill.
Yes, that will be interesting to look at too. And Catherine, isn't it finally we agree completely on one? I had West Virginia at 10 as well.
Okay.
And they have. Yeah, it's been leaning Republican, but, of course, on local races, governor, senator, those kind of things, and probably on down, they're much more likely to vote Democratic. And Jay Rockefeller, longtime senator, he's finally retiring, and that caused an open seat. You've got a big old long list of candidates, but Shelley Moore Capito, a Republican congresswoman, probably the highest-ranking Republican official for a long time in West Virginia, she's probably going to be the Republican nominee. Secretary of State Natalie Tennant, who was also on their TV news for a long time, she ran for governor. She's probably going to be the Democratic nominee. So two really, really strong candidates, both female, by the way. Same thing we've got in Kentucky when we get there. Same thing I have a gut feeling we're going to have in Georgia. So that's going to be something to watch. And obviously Shelley Moore Capito's congressional seat, the second district, is going to be up for grabs. So you put all that together, and 10, West Virginia could be a state that's going to move upward as we keep following this. Catherine, I'm not sure where that was in the background, but
I dropped my phone. I dropped my phone, but I got it back.
Oh, okay. Luckily, it still keeps on ticking, if you will.
Yes.
Well, now let's go ahead and go across, and we'll kind of go westward into Kentucky, and that's the home of Mitch McConnell. And, Catherine, where did you have Kentucky?
3.
Very high. I had it top half three, but not quite as high as you. They have 5. Looking at my phone again to make sure I had 5, but still rather high. I think a lot of my 5, there's a lot of good Senate races, but just the fact that this is Mitch McConnell, the face of the Republicans in the Senate, and he's really, you know, all the polls that have come out, even though Allison Leonard Grimes, Secretary of State again, you know, she kind of got out of the gate a little slow. She still does very well in the polls, and you get the idea that this thing's going to be a single-digit race the entire time. And if Mitch McConnell were to get knocked off, it would be one of the top stories nationally just because of who he is. You know, is that a lot of where your ranking came from, too?
Yeah, exactly. And she, you know, she raised a lot of money. Not as much as Wendy Davis, but she raised $2.5 million in the last reporting. And then, now, is that where – does Mitch McConnell have a primary?
He probably does, and he's not real popular Bevin. With the Tea Partiers, you're right. You have to believe he survives.
Well, that Bevan guy raised a bunch of money, though. He had a, I mean, not compare, you know, McConnell's got like $10 million in the bank or whatever. But he raised, you know, a couple million in this last reporting, I think. Like a little, not a couple, a little over a million. But that's quite a bit for, you know, someone challenging a Mitch McConnell. So you have to wonder if the Tea Party prevails.
Yeah, and obviously the influence buyers, if you will, weren't donating to that fella, and he still raised that kind of money. There are some congressional races. I don't think they're as top shelf as some of the other ones around, but just the star power or leadership power of Mitch McConnell keeps that one up high for both of us.
Exactly.
I guess the next state, just kind of if we're going across, trying to keep it nice and geographically clean, let's go to Tennessee. Catherine, how, I'm going to just be honest, how low did you have that one?
I had Tennessee, Mississippi, and Louisiana tied at 7.
Ties, okay.
I know I'm not supposed to do that. But I felt like they were all, they all have like these clown cars running for governor and Senate. So it's like not that interesting until after the primary to me.
Yeah, I went ahead and put it 12th, real low. If you look, you know, and they do have a governor's election, but they don't really have any candidates. And they have a Senate election that if Lamar Alexander is the nominee, which I'm assuming he will be, they once again don't really have any candidates. It's the craziest thing. If you look at politics, one, Mark Clayton, an insurance agent, Army veteran, conservative activist, and the guy that ran in 08 and 10 that was, I think, got one of the nominations and was an embarrassment, he is listed as a candidate for governor and for U.S. senator. I mean, he's running for everything. And, the Democratic Party there can't seem to push him aside with any kind of named candidate. On the congressional end, of course, you got I always just maul his name, but you've got Scott Desjardins. I think I may have done better than ever, but that gentleman's going to be in a tough primary. I mean, tough primary and probably a tough general if he makes it through. He's got one of the more interesting races, but really nobody else has a real stiff challenge on the congressional side. So, you know, if you could infuse some really strong top-level candidates into Tennessee on the Democratic side, you could make it more interesting. But until that happens, it is just a very one-sided state. I don't know what happened to Phil Bredesen and whatever of the machine he would have built, because, you know, he had the governor's mansion longer than Democrats did in a lot of other southern states. But it's fallen fast there. Well, let's move on to Alabama. I think you talked about a tie. Tell us where you had Alabama.
No, I don't have anything for Alabama. I did not get to Alabama in my work this evening.
I guess if, Catherine, if you were doing college football rankings, they would be 26th or below because they don't rank you after 25. I did rank Alabama. I ranked them 13, next to last for me. And you're probably saying, how can anybody be lower than Alabama this year? And no insult to Alabama, but there's just, once again, it's all Republicans that have the incumbencies. There's no, Jeff Sessions, the incumbent senator, doesn't even have a challenger. You know, what's going on here? But, of course, as long as they've got that guy that ran for agriculture commissioner that might be stealing stuff out of the local Walmart or Sam's, there's a chance they could get interesting. But, you know, they do have a lot of Republican primaries, and who knows, maybe somebody gets Tea Party. They do have a open House seat. Spencer Baucus is retiring, and I want to say, let me see some of the Auburn University. I'm looking. I think that may be the one that goes all the way down to the coast, if I'm not mistaken. And so, you know, that could be an interesting seat. And of course, you got Bradley Byrne, who won that special election. And sometimes when you win a special election, people come after you again. So, you know, it has potential to be sort of interesting if more candidates get recruited. Let's look at Mississippi. And Catherine, where'd you have that one? I think that was that
was in On My Tie. But one of the things, interesting things I found when, you know, looking around on the web this afternoon and yesterday was that the Clarion Ledger, which is one of their newspapers.
Jackson, yes.
Jackson had an editorial basically saying, vote out the Republicans for not extending unemployment. I mean, it was quite definitive. Like, vote the bums out, basically. We have all such high unemployment, and this was just a slap in the face to our citizens. So just vote the bums out. I was like, you know, you don't see editorials quite that blatant anymore, really. Except maybe occasionally from Jay Bookman.
Well, in Mississippi is I'll go ahead and tell you my ranking since that's kind of the framework we're doing. I put it at number 9, higher than some of these other states. And one thing, and I'll just tell you about the whole overall state is, you know, I had never spent a lot of time in Mississippi, but one time in the first 25 years I was alive. Of course, you hear all these bad things about Mississippi. But then when I started doing political campaigns, and I ended up working a good many Mississippi races, I just met the best people. I mean, like Robert Hooks. I mean, I knew Robert before he started being on the show, and I mean, we know how great he is when he comes on the show, but he's not the only one. There's a lot of great folks that are good Democrats there, and they put up, you know, just a good fight, and sometimes they win races when you don't expect it, like Travis Childers. And, you know, Gene Taylor held that seat he had for a long time. So you see all these things happening. And so you say, there's more to this state. And it just impresses you. Ricky Cole, their chair, is a great guy. And so
we were able to defeat the Personhood Amendment in 2011, which was never expected. So, yeah, I agree. You know, there are some bright spots in Mississippi, and I think it's just a matter of – maybe it's a matter of waiting for the demographics to reach them or for them to get more organized or whatever. But, I mean, I think I agree with you. It's not a lost cause for us Democrats.
Yeah. Well, and actually the demographics, I mean, they have the largest African-American population in the nation. It's really just a matter, and that is a state where really it's a matter of, changing some white voters' minds. And folks like Travis Childers, when he won, he did that. I guess if we want to get to the nuts and bolts on what's the most interesting race, you have this U.S. Senate race where Chris McDaniel is going to Tea Party Thad Cochran, who decided to make the race. We've covered this before. But what happens out of that race, and if Travis Childers does decide to run, or another candidate of that quality, you could have a two-tiered, you could have your primary be interesting and your general be interesting. And, of course, you never know what a Tea Party candidate is going to say. And then you also have some House races. You got the one guy that's the silver spoon down there. I believe his name's Steve Paluzzo. Or Palazzo, he's not real popular, and so that could be another race that, he could be in trouble in the general or the primary, depending on who runs where down the road. So that's where Gene Taylor is actually looking at running against him, and people are still not sure if he's going to go Democrat, Independent, or Republican. So it'd be fascinating to watch, no matter what happens. Well, let's keep moving through, Catherine, and Louisiana will be one of our next states.
Louisiana one of my ties.
Yeah, Louisiana is always such a fascinating state. There's a political documentary back from, I think, the late 80s, early 90s called The Louisiana Boys, and it even has its own song saying Raised on Politics. You know, got some great movies that have come out of about Louisiana politics, and this year they've got a Senate race. Tell us where you've got them ranked.
I've got them ranked at 7, at a tie for 7.
I was close to you,
There's a bunch of Republicans running for Senate, right?
Yeah, well, and I've got them ranked at 6, so we were real close on that one.
Yeah.
Looking at it, they've got Bill Cassidy, who's probably the front runner, but you got Don Rowe and Paul Hollis, Rob Manassas, all running as Republicans. Jeff Landry, who was a congressman, could get in on that thing. I guess they all think, well, you know, Louisiana, the demographics have shifted in our favor. We've been winning a lot of races. If I can just get the nomination, I can defeat Mary Landrieu, and that has been said more than once, and they haven't got her yet. So it'd be interesting to see if this is the year. But you have a funny feeling that with Louisiana's election laws where they you know, they have like that jungle primary where everybody runs, and then, of course, if nobody gets enough of the vote, they go into December. Mary Landrieu's been involved in one of those at least once. You kind of could see this thing going into overtime, if you will.
Yeah.
And Donna Brazile going back to her home state, shaking people out of movie theaters, you know, to vote on a Saturday, because it ends up being a Saturday runoff like she has before. When you hear about that race, I've heard her talk in person about it. It was fascinating, you know, how they won that thing back in, I believe, 2002. It was when, or maybe in 2000, actually it was 2004. It was after George Bush was reelected, and then we won that race. So it's kind of like, well, maybe all is not lost.
Right.
There's also District 6, if Bill Cassidy runs and wins the nomination, or I guess even if he doesn't run, he's got to put something up, and that's his seat. And you've got a laundry list of people. You've got 2 Democrats. You've got 5 Republicans announced. And then you've got a quarter of the people, the rest of the people living in the district, looking at this thing. I think if you're a councilman in Baton Rouge or a state rep or anything, you're looking at it. State senators all looking at District 6 and that primary, so that could be interesting as well. And I did hear about a comeback by Edwin Edwards, that he's, you know, been looking at some different races. I think in particular he's looked at that District 6 race. And, of course, if Edwin Edwards were to run, that's a fascinating story within itself.
Yeah, so I guess we will be probably looking at Louisiana, but maybe more after the primaries.
Yeah, it's there, and it, of course, could move up the rankings, and that's true. If some of these primaries happen and they're not as good as we thought they'd be, or they, you know, certain outcomes show up, then, you know, we move those states up or down based on it. Well, let's go ahead and move one state north, and that would be Arkansas. And maybe it was just because we had Drew Pitt on the show recently, and he just made every race seem like it was just a main event. But I ranked Arkansas number 1. Where did you have it?
Really? Captain? I had him at number
9.
Number 9?
Go
ahead and tell us about Arkansas.
Well, I mean, Catherine, you got a governor's race. And it's probably the only southern state where you have a governor's race that's an open seat where the Democrat is the favorite. And to me, in a state like Arkansas, if we're the favorite, that probably means we have a fighting chance. I wouldn't bet, you know, 10% of my mortgage. You know, they say bet the house. I wouldn't bet anything on us winning it because we just have such rotten luck in governor's races in the South recently. And so, but I do think the fact that, you know, Mike Ross is a favorite gives us a great shot. So that means we'll probably be a nail biter, and hopefully we'll pull this thing out. You got the chaotic mess at lieutenant governor where Mark Darby resigning, and you got some special election. They got 3 candidates there. You got, it looks like everything down ballot, the attorney general and the state auditor, both of those races are open. The state treasurer is open. So you only got like 2 guys or 2 people retaining their seats. Then on the U.S. Senate side, you've got Mark Pryor, who is the incumbent, but is one of the seats that the Republicans are coming after. They've got Tom Cotton running against there. I have a sneaking feeling Mark Pryor is going to pull this out, but it may not be by much, so it's going to be interesting to watch. You got District 2. That Tim Griffin's retiring, and Patrick Henry Hayes, apparently he's popular, and Bill Clinton is going to come down and campaign for him. In District 4, Tom Cotton's retiring, and James Lee Witt, probably one of the few FEMA directors that everybody knows his name, he's running, and Bill Clinton's going to help him there. And here's the thing that I think makes Arkansas even that much more interesting. If Bill Clinton goes into Arkansas and he wins every race he campaigns in, people are going to say, Bill Clinton is back. He is ready to help make his wife president. But if he goes into Arkansas and he loses race after race, people might say, I don't know, maybe the Clintons aren't what they used to be. And so fairly or unfairly, I think what happens in Arkansas with the ex-president campaigning so hard is going to have national implications.
That's really interesting and very insightful. I tend to agree with you that could be it'll be interesting to watch.
So next time we rank, I have a feeling Catherine's going to have moved Arkansas up. Maybe not to number one, but moved it up, right, Catherine?
I think you're absolutely right. I was mistaken in my ranking of Arkansas.
Or either I bamboozled you with a lot of words just then. One or the other. Who knows? Well, the last state that we're going to rank, and if you've listened and been writing them down and you see we've missed something, I apologize, but I will have it on Facebook soon. Actually, if you podcast this thing, it'll already be up there. It's Texas, largest state in the South, and it is the one where if Texas goes Democratic, the Republicans pretty much need to fold up shop, just like if California goes Republican, the Democrats could fold up shop too. That's what's always said. Where'd you put Texas at?
I have them at 6.
Okay, we're not too far off. I had them at 8. They have a governor's race, which is going to be, very well watched, because you were mentioning Wendy Davis, and Wendy Davis has kind of jumped into the national spotlight. There was an article today in the Dallas Morning News saying that maybe her bio wasn't exactly what it seemed, but the more I read about the article, it didn't seem to be this big cutting thing. I mean, it seems to be that her bio was pretty close to what we thought it was. What are some reasons you ranked where you did?
Well, she's raised a lot of money. She's raised, we were over here in Georgia, we were all excited about Jason Carter raising, $1.2 million. She raised $12 million.
Yeah.
And, there's just a lot of attention on her, and which just brings a lot of attention to Texas and sort of to the, to women candidates in general. I think she's, rumor has it that she's going to be in Atlanta at a fundraiser. So she's, expanding her fundraising universe to raise money around the country, which is not surprising because she got so much attention last year. So I think that's going to be the main thing that attracts us to Texas. But I think there's some other races that will be interesting to watch as well.
Yeah, I wonder how common it is for a candidate to raise money outside of their home state because, I'm not someone that is wealthy enough that I can just give money to this candidate and that candidate. And if I, scratch together $100, I just don't see any way I could give it to Wendy Davis in Texas as opposed to Jason Carter in Georgia. I wish her all the luck, but I just don't see – maybe there's a lot of folks that can, spend up to the legal limit on 10 governor's races, and God bless them.
Well, there are people,
it is kind of unusual.
There are people that, larger donors that give to candidates across the country. I mean, if you look at some of the – I used to spend a lot of time looking at, disclosures – of celebrities and wealthy people and they do spread their money around the country. So and Atlanta is a wealthy town, wealthy city, and goes in and out of here. So I'm with you. I'm even more specific. Like, I don't really give money to anyone except local candidates. Like, I don't give money really generally to federal candidates that are running nationally. You know,
yeah,
like I almost never give to a presidential campaign, almost never give to a senatorial campaign, because I don't have very much money, and my little bit of money is much more helpful to a state senate or state rep or to a governor candidate than to a senate or presidential candidate. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, and same thing with federal candidate. Like if I'm, you know, in Georgia and I said, hey, I'm going to, you know, donate to somebody out of Georgia, it seems like you might look at a federal candidate that their vote is going to impact you more. And, you know, if I'm saying, hey, I've got $100 extra I can spend out of Georgia, maybe I send it to Allison Lindgren Grimes to defeat Mitch McConnell and then help the, you know, national Democrats that can then vote for me, as opposed to, I mean, you know, Texas could pass some wonderful laws and, you know, I'm not going to be the beneficiary of them. I mean, just like if a guy in Texas said, I mean, if they're like, hey, let's vote donate Jason Carter, great, but they're not going to be the beneficiary of whatever good work was done in Georgia. You know, you mentioned that $12 million figure. You know, one thing cool to keep in mind is, of course, in Texas you have San Antonio, Dallas, Houston media markets. Austin probably has a little bit of its own, even though it's close to San Antonio. That hadn't even gotten into El Paso and, you know, Amarillo and Corpus Christi. And the state is just so gigantic with so many media markets. The amount of money it takes to run and just travel that state is something else. And, of course, I guess to be remiss not to mention other races, John Cornyn is running for re-election, and he has a ton of Republicans running against him in their primary. He's tried to run a lot on pro-life issues, which it seems like abortion would not be the number one issue sitting U.S. senator to run on, but I think he's afraid of getting Tea Partied, and so he's using that as a way to endear himself to Ted Cruz forces. And, of course, another reason why Texas might be more interesting is, of course, because Ted Cruz just comes out with some of the only and best political coloring books we've seen, right, Kevin?
Plus, you know, there's the idea that he's going to try to run for president, even though we don't think he's a legitimate candidate.
Yeah, he may not be able to. Yeah, he may have an easier time legally running for Prime Minister of Canada. is what some people may think. But then, of course, there's a, you know, how many congressional districts in Texas? I believe 36 districts in Texas. There are some open seats, including Steve Stockman's. And so, you know, some of those races, out of 36 of these things, one or two of them is bound to be interesting. So you have that to look at. So just the sheer number of races in Texas, I guess, we'll never let it get into the, you know, double digits in our rankings. Well, that's what we've got tonight. Like I said, I'm going to put mine on Facebook. And, Catherine, I encourage you to post in the comments, hopefully comment number one, your rankings. And then if our listeners, they want to put their own rankings up, that'd be awesome. We can see where we agree and disagree on this thing, and then we'll try to revisit this later in the year, if you will. So,
okay, cool.
That's what we got on this tonight. And any more things going on? We got like a minute left. I know, Catherine, you're on the pulse of Georgia politics, Atlanta politics. Any things going on this week that we need to know about?
Well, it's the kickoff of Women in the Halls, the Planned Parenthood's citizen lobby program. So any listeners out there who would like to come down and lobby their legislators, Wednesday morning at 9 a.m., room 328 in the Coverdell Legislative Office Building, come on down. I'll give you a little lobby training, some breakfast, and we'll head over to the Capitol, and you can pull out your senators and representatives and talk to them about whatever it is that's interesting to you.
That sounds good. You'll have to tell us how it goes next week on the show.
Every Wednesday throughout the session. So,
good deal. Well, for the Kudzu Vine, this is good night.
Thanks, David. Good night.
We
we are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.